This is Taking Aim with
Rav Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, December 28th, 2004. Lockheed Martin, based in Bethesda, Maryland, is best known for its weapons. It builds most U.S. warplanes. It creates rockets for nuclear missiles, sensors for spy satellites, and scores of other military and intelligence systems. Over the last decade, Lockheed, the largest military contractor, has built as well a formidable information technology empire that stretches from the Pentagon to the post office. It sorts your mail and totals your taxes. It cuts Social Security checks and counts the United States Census. It runs space flights and monitors air traffic. Lockheed Martin, concludes New York Times reporter Tim Weiner, runs a breathtakingly big part of the United States. In fact, states Daniel Bryan of the Project on Government Oversight, it's impossible to tell where the government ends and Lockheed begins. The fox isn't guarding the hen house. He lives there. Today, on Taking Aim, we examine the power and influence of Lockheed Martin, the nature of crony capitalism, and its expanding role in the pursuit of permanent war. Our program, Lockheed and the Murder State. Ralph?
The article by Tim Weiner in the New York Times on November 28th is rather an extraordinary summary of a remarkable report by the Polaris Institute on Lockheed and the Future of Warfare. But in this article, which if you were to take off the name Tim Weiner and that of the New York Times, it could have been written by Marx and Engels, is a delineation of the indisputable link between the state apparatus and corporate capitalism and its dependence upon warfare as an instrument not only of exploitation, but of securing imperial reach. If you look carefully at this article and at the report on which it is based, it is very clear as to what the nature of the state is in the United States. Yes, it is the heart of America's arsenal, says Tim Weiner. Lockheed builds most of the nation's warplanes, rockets, nuclear missiles, and sensors for spy satellites and scores of other military and intelligence systems. But most significantly, quote, the Pentagon and the Central Intelligence Agency would have difficulty functioning without Lockheed. It is Lockheed which has control. It stands at the intersection of policy and technology. And as its new chief executive, Robert J. Stevens, said, and described here by Weiner as a tightly wound Marine, we are deployed entirely in developing daunting technology and thinking through the policy dimensions of national security, as well as all technological dimensions of the state and of social functioning in this country.
Weiner notes no contractor is in a better position than Lockheed to do business in Washington. Nearly 80% of Lockheed Martin's revenue comes from the United States government. Most of the rest comes from foreign military sales, many of them financed with tax dollars that we will discuss in this program. Former Lockheed executives, lobbyists, and lawyers hold crucial posts at the White House and the Pentagon. These are the very people who pick the weapons and select policies. War and crisis have been good for business. The Pentagon's budget for buying new weapons rose about a third over the last 3 years. And, incidentally, while the budget rose about a third over the last 3 years, Lockheed's sale also rose about a third to $32 billion in the 2003 calendar year, just from Pentagon purchases. Lockheed's stock, consequently, has tripled in the last 4 years. War and crisis go hand in hand for Lockheed Martin.
Well, Maya, when Danielle Bryan of the Project on Government Oversight states, it is impossible to tell where the United States government ends and Lockheed begins, She is describing a feature that is now irreversible with respect to the capitalist state. The rest of the operations is not just pertaining to war and crisis, which are good for business, but the Pentagon's budget for buying new weapons is dependent upon Lockheed. Tens of billions of dollars in future orders are on its books. It used to be just an airplane company, said John Pike, the military analyst and director of global security from a research organization in Alexandria, Virginia. Now it's a warfare company, but it's an integrated solution provider. It's a one-stop shop. Anything you need to kill the enemy, they will sell you. They are not just seeking to solve the problems of national security, they are framing the questions as well. There are too few soldiers to secure the forest reaches of Iraq. Lockheed is creating robot soldiers and neural software, what they call intelligent agents, to do this imperial work. We've now created policy options where you can elect to put in a human or you elect to put an intelligent agent in place, Mr. Stevens says. And thousands of CIA and Pentagon analysts, drowning under a flood of data, incapable of seeing deep patterns, depend upon Lockheed's intelligence information factory to do their thinking for them.
Ralph, one product that Lockheed is developing has particular interest to the program we discussed last week about consolidating the martial law state, and that is Lockheed's mobile lab for reading fingerprints. Lockheed executives say that the mobile lab, which is the size of a laptop, is just the right tool for special operations commandos. It can be loaded with the prints of, quote, suspected terrorists and linked to the FBI's 470 million print files. Note this. The FBI has accumulated 470 million fingerprints in its files, more than each and every individual in the United States. Now, we have discussed in the past how in Iraq, many of the Iraqis over the age of 18 and up until their 50s, the men are being rounded up and fingerprinted, and their files are being put into a consolidated file. Add this to the FBI's files, and you can see the benefit to the U.S. military. What Lockheed states is that it doesn't stop there. Weiner notes in an interview he had with them that they think the American police departments will want this mobile lab for reading fingerprints too, consolidating the martial law state.
Yes, Maya. In fact, the American police departments are integrated within the surveillance system and the totalitarian state that is no longer a matter of theory. The Department of Homeland Security, Weiner describes, has the best tools to protect the nation. Lockheed is their dependent supplier. It is a host of military and intelligence technologies which they supply to every police enforcement unit in the United States. What they do for the military in downtown Fallujah, they are doing for the police in downtown Reno, said John David Black of Lockheed's Horizontal Integration Vision Division. Lockheed is developing a huge high-altitude airship, 25 times larger than the Goodyear blimp, to help the Pentagon with the, quote, unsolved problems of protecting the nation. The airship with 2 tons of surveillance sensors will be used by the Department of Homeland Security to stare down at the United States, Lockheed officials states. Lockheed has set up spy cameras and sensors on the USS New Jersey. Where is it anchored? In the Delaware River, providing 24-hour surveillance of the ports of Philadelphia and Camden, New Jersey, and the inner cities as well. And this program grew out of the Aegis weapons and surveillance systems for the Navy ships that Lockheed provided, and it is going to spread throughout the United States. The melding, Weiner describes, of, quote, military and intelligence programs, information technology, and domestic security operations began in earnest after the September 11 attacks. Lockheed was perfectly positioned to take advantage of the shift. when the United States government decided to let corporate America handle its federal information technology. Lockheed leapt at the opportunity. Its information technology sales quadrupled, and it is the number one supplier to the federal government, which now outsources 83% of this work.
That's four-fifths of the information technology work. And what do we mean by information technology work? That is the handling of Medicare, of Social Security, of the census data, of the tax forms, all the basic information about you, me, and everyone else in the United States is outsourced to companies like Lockheed, like EDS, the company that was developed by Ross Perot and then taken over by General Motors and then spun off again by IBM, by Unisys, by Dyncor, the privatized military supplier as well. These are the companies that are data aggregators that are handling all the IT work for the federal government, and moreover, not just the federal government, for state governments, county governments, and city governments, local governments throughout the United States. The number one supplier to the federal government is Lockheed Martin.
Maya, Lockheed has taken over the job of making all data flow throughout the United States government, including the FBI's computer networks, to the Departments of Health and Human Services, engaged in tracking all child support in the United States, a $525 million contract to control the Social Security Administration's information system, an $87 million contract for computers to communicate control the secrets that stream through the Department of Homeland Security, rebuilding the United States Coast Guard, which is a $17 billion program, supplying under the Patriot Act the biometric identity cards for controlling every citizen in the United States, the totalitarian state, the strongest corporate force driving the Pentagon's plans for what are called net-centric warfare. The big idea, as Weiner describes it, of fusing military, intelligence, and weapons programs through a military internet called the Global Information Grid, which allows soldiers and police throughout the world to have an instant picture of everything before them. We want to know what's going on anytime, any place on the planet, said Lorraine M. Martin, Vice President and Deputy of Lockheed's Joint Command, Control, and Communication Systems Division. Talk about Big Brother, it's here.
Ralph, I'd like to go back to the $17 billion program given to Lockheed to, quote, rebuild the United States Coast Guard. This includes not just the information technology. In fact, Lockheed Martin is revamping the warships of the Coast Guard and much of the military bases of the Coast Guard. So you can see that it's Lockheed that is actually creating the new Coast Guard. And as for those biometric identity cards, they will affect at first 6 million Americans in transportation business. That means everyone, like the members of the ILWU working in the ports, as well as people working in river transport, working in the airports. Lockheed Martin is the company that is creating the screening network for the air transport system. It was to Lockheed Martin that American Airlines turned over a million of its passenger records, that Northwest Airlines turned over millions of passenger records, and to whom JetBlue turned over its records to create the no-fly list. Ralph?
Well, let's look at the what is called Lockheed's global reach. Quote, its critical mass allows it to now control global products for the global marketplace, said Robert H. Trice, Jr., the Senior Vice President for Lockheed Corporate Business Development. Lockheed has a dominant position in fighter jets, missiles, rockets, and all weapons systems. Lockheed technology drives the security spending for all U.S. allies and will do so for coming decades. It sells aircraft and weapons to over 40 countries. The United States taxpayer is financing these sales, Weiner describes. Israel spends much of the $1.8 billion given to it in military aid from the United States to buy F-16 warplanes from Lockheed. So the taxpayer subsidizes the Zionist state, and it turns around and purchases from Lockheed at huge profits. And it is dependent upon the Lockheed supply as it would be upon the air it breathes. 24 nations fly the F-16. The Lockheed factory in Fort Worth, Texas, is building 10 for Chile, Oman a dozen next year, Poland 48. The United States Treasury will cover the cost with a $3.8 billion subsidy. So it's subsidized as it profiteers, it controls the national security state, and it is totally it lives on the tit of the American taxpayer.
Ralph, let's look at the F-16 in the profile. Lockheed Martin, the weapons manufacturer that does it all, that was prepared by the Polaris Institute, as you mentioned before, in October of 2004. Richard Gerard wrote the report, and you can see it at www.polarisinstitute.org. Polaris Institute, by the way, evolved from people who were involved in the anti-WTO campaign, and it is situated in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, and it is a meticulous study of Lockheed Martin. The F-16 is no longer used by the United States military, but all that development is sustained by the United States in the sales to countries throughout the world. As you mentioned, Israel. Also, there's Egypt. Egypt purchased its first Lockheed Martin-built F-16 fighter plane in 1982 and now has a total of 220, notes the Polaris Group. Egypt received $13 billion in foreign military financing from the U.S. government. And just like with Israel, payment of the loan has been waived by the United States. So we have Israel, we have Egypt. The same is true for Turkey. Up to 75% of the aircraft that are being sold to Turkey in an arrangement accepted by the United States will be manufactured in Turkey. In fact, Poland ordered 48 F-16s, and it goes on and on, country by country. As well, the United States military itself has just given approval to Lockheed to build as many of its new F-22s as possible. Note the price of each one of these fighter jets. They're the most expensive fighter jet in history. $258 million apiece. I repeat, $258 million apiece for an F-22, and Lockheed has approval to build as many as possible.
Well, Maya, the F-22 is only the little beginning. Lockheed is building and selling hundreds of billions of dollars worth of the next generation of warplanes, the F-35. For the U.S. Army, Navy, and Air Force, and to dozens of United States so-called allies. In fact, 3 years ago, Lockheed became the prime contractor for the F-35, known as the Joint Strike Fighter. The program was valued at $200 billion alone, the largest Pentagon project in history. But as Tim Weiner describes it, the $200 billion is only the tip of the iceberg. Quote, "It is really worth a great deal more. The F-35, in its first stages of development in Fort Worth, has an additional program of onboard computers that will require 3.9 million lines of code, and each of the U.S. military service will want a different version of the jet." Quote, "It's a terrific opportunity for us," said Bob Elrod, senior Lockheed manager for the F-35. "It will be a tremendous success at the level of the F-16, over 4,000 plus and growing. It represents world domination for a Lockheed," quote unquote, he said. And in the United States, where the national security spending now surpasses $500 billion a year, Lockheed's total dominance is growing. Its own executives say the concentration of power among these military contractors is more intense than any other sector of business outside of banking. And three or four major companies, Lockheed, General Dynamics, Northrop and Grumman with Boeing rule the industry with Lockheed the hegemonic force. They work like general contractors building customized houses, and they farm out and subcontract the painting, the floors, and the cabinets to smaller subcontractors and take a large slice of the money. They run the show.
They run the show, and they run it over decades, such as with the Joint Strike Force, the new plane that is being built. Tim Weiner interviewed Dov Zakim, who had been one of the people who developed President Bush's strategy for the military that we've discussed over and again. And Dov Zakim was the Pentagon's controller and chief financial officer during the last 3 years. He recently resigned and joined the consulting firm of Booz Allen Hamilton, the same consulting firm that former CIA Director Woolsey is working for. And what he talked about, particularly with Tim Weiner, is how long it takes to build a major weapons system. 2 decades to build one, and the costs are staggering. What happens with the 2 decades is that the price, as originally approved by Congress, is really not the price that it ends up costing. Every time there is an adjustment, and this adjustment keeps coming and being approved by both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives, so that any price that is originally targeted as the price for a weapon system is nowhere near the final cost of that ends up going to Lockheed, to Boeing, to Northrop Grumman. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. Well, what is important about your citation here with Dov Zakim, with the Rabbi Zakim, is the following. When we reported in earlier programs, Maya, about the disappearance and looting of vast sums from the Pentagon and from the National Treasury, we cited such numbers of $2.2 trillion, of $4.1 trillion, and as Robert J. Lieberman, the government accounting officer functionary, described, $7.2 trillion without a paper trail. One of the figures who was instrumental in overseeing this process through which this looting occurred, the wholesale disappearance of trillions of dollars, was Dov Zakim. And Dov Zakim is not just linked to the Pentagon accounting, which allows the disappearance of trillions of dollars into the maw of secret accounts, offshore accounts, proprietorial companies, sums of money that dwarf the budget for anything else in the United States, but it is directly linked to 9/11. Because absent 9/11, the entire thrust of U.S. policy of subsidizing the defense industry on a scale that had never before been seen was on hold. With the collapse of the Soviet Union and the nominal end of the Cold War, it was on hold. It is 9/11 which allows trillions of dollars to go into the maw of Pentagon capital. It is 9/11 that allows for a $200 billion windfall in one airplane project alone for Lockheed. The murder state is dependent upon such events as 9/11, and anybody who is not a gatekeeper, who analyzes with the minimum of objectivity the direct relationship between the false war on terror and the apparatus of the murder state, we'll see the one-to-one relationship between these things.
Ralph, it's important to repeat over and again that this is a false war on terror, because more and more I'm seeing in books such as The Price of War, political scientists and other people who consider themselves analysts are accepting the premise that there is a worldwide war on terror, and that it is the responsibility of the United States to fund what's called homeland security, and to fund the overseas imperial adventures in order to ensure safety here at home. That in fact there is a real war on terror, that this is not an artificial construct, when in fact this is an artificial construct.
Well, the artificial construct is very clearly defined by the fact that every single element of what is called the terrorist apparatus had its origins with intelligence funding provided by such companies as Lockheed. How do you think the Al-Qaeda apparatus was constructed, except with billions of dollars of U.S. funding? There isn't a single such group that isn't totally penetrated by U.S. intelligence apparatus and U.S. intelligence agents. And the computer-controlled communication systems, from the Promise hardware to Converse hardware to the electronic spying of which they are so proud that now targets every city in the United States, controlled and monitored all of these funded apparatuses such as Al-Qaeda, initiated by the United States government. There's a one-to-one relationship between this and the murder state that we are now describing.
Let's look at how Lockheed achieves its wealth. Lockheed's wealth flows directly from the Treasury, notes Weiner, where competition for foreign markets is both controlled and subsidized by the White House and Congress, and where Lockheed's influence runs so deep. Men who have worked, lobbied, and lawyered for Lockheed hold the posts of Secretary of the Navy, Secretary of Transportation, Director of the National Nuclear Weapons Complex, that's the Sandia Lab, and Director of the National Spy Satellite Agency. The list also includes Stephen J. Hadley, who has been named the next National Security Advisor to the President, succeeding Condoleezza Rice. Former Lockheed executives serve on the Defense Policy Board, the Defense Science Board, and the Homeland Security Advisory Council, which make military and intelligence policy and pick weapons for future battles. Lockheed's board includes E.C. Aldrich Jr., who was the Pentagon's chief weapons buyer and gave the go-ahead to build the F-22. In other words, Lockheed Martin is a revolving door between industry and government.
Yes, Maya, and I think it's important for us to note that the revolving door includes both parties that are funded by the same apparatus. Take the figure of Norman Y. Mineta, the Transportation Secretary and former member of Congress. He was the Transportation Secretary under Bill Clinton. He is the Transportation Secretary under George Bush. He, in fact, is the figure who is instrumental in lobbying for Lockheed, along with Haley Barbour, the governor of Mississippi and the former Republican national chairman, Otto Reich, who persuaded Congress to sell Lockheed's L-16s to Chile, to Pinochet, before becoming President Bush's main Latin America policy aide. The connections give what Weiner calls for Lockheed, quote, a tremendous opportunity to control contracts flowing to the company. Said indeed, Ms. Bryan of the Project on Government Oversight, more valuable yet is the ability of Lockheed to benefit from their eyes and ears inside the government to know exactly what is on the horizon and what are the best bets for the government's future technology needs, which Lockheed will determine and Lockheed will control. So, says Weiner, who serves as the overseer for the biggest military contractors and their costly weapons? The customer itself, the Pentagon. And who controls this? Why, none other than Lockheed. And as you cite, these programs are so huge, said Dove S. Zackheim, the Pentagon's controller and chief financial officer, there is a historical tendency to underestimate the significance of this, to underestimate the technological hurdles that have to be overcome, to underestimate the costs that are required. Lockheed is in the position of doing all of those things.
Lockheed Martin, the weapons manufacturer that does it all. The profile from the Polaris Institute is detailed about Lockheed and its relationship to the government. And we will look at this after this station ID when we return to Taking Aim.
Yo, this is Michael Franti from Street, and you're listening to non-commercial radio in New York. WBAI is the place to turn to.
Oh my God. And my mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my God. And my mother got a sleeping genocide singing. Oh my God. And my mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my.
My God.
Maya Shem, our program today, Locking and Murder State. We resume with an analysis developed by the Polaris Institute in Canada. They have in their third section a political profile of Lockheed and the Lockheed Martin executives currently in the U.S. government. We've mentioned some of them, and we're going to detail even more because it gives you a real picture of how money flows to Lockheed Martin and how their executives end up influencing U.S. policy and the drive for permanent war. Everett Boeckner, Deputy Administrator for Defense Programs in the Department of Energy's National Nuclear Security Administration. Prior to his present position, Boeckner served as Vice President of Lockheed Martin, where he was Deputy Chief Executive at the Atomic Weapons Establishment at Aldermaston, United Kingdom. He was sworn in as Deputy Administrator in February 2002. Of course, there's Lynn Cheney, the wife of Vice President Dick Cheney, who had been the CEO of Halliburton. Halliburton, that is doing much of the so-called reconstruction in Iraq and has a no-limit policy of building bases, U.S. Army bases, all around the world. Lynn Cheney sat on the Lockheed Martin Board of Directors until February 2000, and she received a compensation of $120,000 a year just for attending quarterly meetings. Gordon England, Secretary of the Navy. England served as the Executive Vice President of the Combat Systems Group, President of General Dynamics, Fort Worth Aircraft Company. Remember, General Dynamics is another of the big five defense companies, which later became Lockheed Martin. General Dynamics had been bought out by Lockheed, and Lockheed is the marriage of Lockheed and Martin Marietta. England was sworn in as the Secretary of the Navy in October 2003. Then there's Stephen Hadley, who we mentioned before, Deputy National Security Advisor of the U.S. government. Before joining the U.S. administration, Hadley was a partner in the Washington law firm Shea & Gardner, which is one of the large law firms that represents Lockheed Martin. Hadley co-authored the National Institute for Public Policy Report, which was the blueprint for the Bush Nuclear Policy Review. Ralph?
Well, Maya, you mentioned Everett Boeckner and his position as Deputy Chief Executive of Atomic Weapons at Aldermaston. It brings back many memories. My third imprisonment in Great Britain, it was anchored in our mobilizations from Aldermaston to the Trafalgar Square. What were we imprisoned for, brothers and sisters? For conspiracy. Conspiracy to do what? Conspiracy to oppose the nuclear weapons apparatus and the missiles with warning systems of 30 seconds to 15 minutes that couldn't tell a goose from a cabinet minister. The conspirators are quite at home at the center of power. Here is Norman Mineta, who we described a moment before, Secretary of Transportation. From 1975 to 95, he was a member of the House. He resigned his seat to join Lockheed Martin as its vice president. He left his job at Lockheed to become Secretary of Commerce for Bill Clinton. Then he served as chairman of the House Public Works and Transportation Committee, chaired the committee's Aviation Subcommittee and its Surface Transportation Subcommittee before serving as Clinton's Transportation Security Administration Director, and indeed that same position held for George Bush. And during the suzerainty of Mineta, Lockheed Martin received a huge numbers of contracts from the TSA,
including, Ralph, the no-fly list, the one that accumulates millions and millions of our passenger records. Anthony Principe, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, held the Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer post at Lockheed Martin IMS Integrated Solutions from 1995 until 1996. Otto Reich, Special Envoy for the Western Hemisphere Initiatives, former Assistant Secretary for Western Hemisphere Affairs at the State Department, was a paid lobbyist for Lockheed Martin. In fact, he was one of their chief lobbyist.
And it should be pointed out about Otto Reich. Not only is he linked to the Oliver North doings and to Iran-Contra, but he is linked directly to the running of the death squads in Central America, as are all these people who serve as executives of Lockheed Martin. That is their job. Not just national security as it's so defined, but the murder state in its specific and one-on-one application to dissidents, to students, to trade unions, to peasants who disappear, who are tortured, and who are murdered. It is at the handiwork of the executives of Lockheed and the murder state.
Now, there is somebody who really exemplifies not only the revolving door, but the hand in the glove, the integral part of this military-industrial complex with the highest positions in state, and that's Peter Thies. He is the Undersecretary of the Air Force. Thies is the former Chief Operating Officer at Lockheed Martin, a position he held from 1997 through 1999. In his capacity as Undersecretary, Thies oversees the recruiting, the training, and the equipping for the Air Force. Do you remember what we said about how the Air Force has an agreement with, how the Air Force has given Lockheed Martin an agreement to produce as many F-22s as it can at $258 million apiece? Well, it's Peter Thies, the former COO of Lockheed Martin, who makes that decision. He is responsible for a $68 billion budget, and 26% of Lockheed Martin's business comes directly from the United States Air Force.
Actually, Maya, he coordinates and integrates plans and programs for space systems, the acquisition of all Department of Defense space major defense acquisitions, the director of the National Reconnaissance Office, responsible for the operation of reconnaissance and intelligence systems, the National Reconnaissance Program, where he reports directly to the Secretary of Defense and the Director of Central Intelligence. His career begins with Martin Marietta, as an engineer, when he becomes president of Martin Marietta Space Group and president and chief operating officer of Lockheed Martin Information and Services. And who was one of his chief colleagues? None other than William Perry, who was at one point Secretary of Defense, but the chief lobbyist for Martin Marietta and an instrument in the merger between Lockheed and Martin Marietta, John Kerry's point man for national security, along with Richard Morningstar, who was in a similar relationship to Lockheed.
Talk about crony capitalism.
From Bush to Reagan to Clinton to John Kerry, one big property party with two names.
The last person mentioned in this Polaris report, who is currently in the United States government, is Michael Wynn, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. Now remember, these are just the people at the highest level of state. There are many more people who work for the government or work for Lockheed Martin and become through the revolving door in lower positions. But at the highest level, we are giving these examples. Wynn spent 3 years with Lockheed Martin after General Dynamics sold their space systems division to Martin Marietta. We had, remember, this consolidation during the Clinton era of all these defense companies. He eventually became general manager of the Space Launch System segment, combining the Titan with the Atlas launch vehicles, and he was sworn as Undersecretary of Defense in July 2001. With the revolving door, we have U.S. officials who now work for Lockheed Martin. The most well-known is E.C. Pete Aldridge Jr., the Lockheed Martin director since 2003, who served as the Undersecretary for Defense in charge of acquisition, technology, and logistics from May 2001 until May 2003. And Aldridge also served as Secretary of the Air Force from June 1986 until December 1988.
Well, then there's Monty Belger, Vice President of Transportation System Solutions for Lockheed Martin and Air Traffic Management. He's the former Senior Executive Acting Deputy Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration, part of the United States Department of Transportation under Mineta. And then you have John Brophy, Lockheed Martin CEO and president. He was assistant director of the District of Columbia Transportation Department. Michael Jackson, deputy secretary of transportation until 2003, was the chief operating officer at Lockheed Martin Information and Management Services. Thomas Jurkowski, vice president of media relations for Lockheed Martin. 21-year career in the U.S. Navy, joined Lockheed Martin as vice president of communications, chief of information, and the Navy's chief spokesperson for public affairs activity. Gwendolyn King, Lockheed Martin's board of directors, commissioner of the United States Government Social Security Administration. Received $188 million from the Enterprise Technology Services contract from the SSA. Contract responsibilities, she obtained Lockheed's $188 million contract, the single largest contract on the SAA list of in its contracting history.
That's the Social Security Administration.
Yes. And there's Richard Kirkland, Vice President of International Programs at Lockheed, who sits on the U.S. government's Industry Sector Advisory Committee on Aerospace Equipment, provided the U.S. administration with Lockheed Martin's involvement in the ISAC, which, quote, gives them incredible power in the process of influencing the position of the United States administration towards the electronics and instrumentation sector of the economy. There's Eugene Murphy, Lockheed Board of Directors, member of Reagan's National Security Telecommunications Committee. Craig Quigley, Vice President of Communications and Public Affairs for Lockheed Martin, Naval Electronics and Surveillance Systems, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. Joseph Ralston, Board of Directors since 2003 of Lockheed, Commander of the U.S. European Command and Supreme Allied Commander of Europe. Served as Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and in Operational Command, Major Command, and Management positions with the U.S. Air Force. Frank Savage, Lockheed's Board of Directors since 1995, appointed to the Board of Directors of the U.S. Synthetic Fuels Corporation, Director of the Enron Corporation from 1999 to 2002. The list goes on. Here we see the architecture of the ruling class. These are the people who set policy, who control it, who run the state, who profiteer from the state, who control both parties, who fund both parties, who are appointed by both parties, and are in continual control.
Ralph, you can see it in terms of the money Lockheed spends, not just on its lobbying, but on its direct contribution to political candidates. 12 out of the 25 U.S. senators on the U.S. Senate Committee on Armed Services received donations directly from Lockheed Martin's PAC during the 2002 election cycle. 46% of the money that Lockheed donated to Senate candidates during the 2002 cycle. This is just from the direct Lockheed Martin PAC. This is not the money that you then get contributed individually by Lockheed Martin employees and executives as the corporations compel them, essentially, to contribute on their own, to escalate and to increase the amount of money. All 14 members of the House Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, which has considerable influence over the budget, received donations from Lockheed Martin's PAC during the 2002 cycle, and this was again repeated during the 2004 cycle of elections.
Maya, 41% of these proceeds go to the Democrats, about 59% to the Republicans, but they're interchangeable. Of the 61 representatives who are members of the House Armed Services Committee, they all receive, both Republican and Democrat, major political donations from Lockheed Martin's Political Action Committee. In fact, they made contributions to 53 out of the 57 members of the United States Congress House Armed Services Committee, Republicans and Democrats alike. It's so transparent as to how this apparatus works, what is called corporate welfare. Lockheed Martin, one of the most profitable corporations with $31.8 billion in revenue in 2003 alone, is, quote, a notorious recipient of billions of dollars in additional subsidies from the government of the United States. And let's just take a look, Maya, at how this translates into what could be called compensation. Vance D. Kaufman, CEO, chair of the board. His salary and bonus in 2004, $4,153,846. Poor man, only $4 million. Don't worry. His compensation through exercisable stock options was worth $49,257,451 for that year. His total pay package for the year 2004, a mere $53 million. And that goes right down the line. Robert J. Stevens, President and Chief Operations Officer, the salary and bonus, $2 million. The exercisable stock options, $13.5 million. Dane Hancock, Executive Vice President of Lockheed Martin Aeronautics, $2.2 million, $9.4 million in compensation package, right down the line. And indeed, what is instructive about this is that these monies which are handed out to these people are payoffs. They're payoffs because they deliver compensation to the politicians, and they get rewarded by contracts from the same politicians who they pay for. And they change hats and become those politicians themselves, and they go right back into the same office as executives and members of the board of directors of Lockheed Martin, and profit from their own activity as former heads of departments and of cabinet positions in the murder state administrative apparatus. This is the ruling class.
78%. Almost 80%, four-fifths, of Lockheed revenue comes from the government. Talk about a cash cow of our hard-earned money from us through the government and back to Lockheed Martin. And, as we mentioned before, 83% of the federal government's IT, that is the information technology services, are now outsourced, a major part going to Lockheed Martin. But it's not just the agencies such as the U.S. Social Security Administration, where Lockheed has been awarded numerous contracts to handle retirement, disability, family, survivors, and Medicare benefits. And this contract is going on for 20 years. It's not a short-term contract. The corporation has also been awarded numerous contracts by state governments who provide their own Social Security services. And a subsidiary of Lockheed, Information Management Systems, which was sold to ACS, State and Local Solutions, in 2001. This was the division that was the major force in the privatization of welfare services in the United States, working directly with the Clinton administration for the Welfare to Work program that was designed in the 1990s. In fact, the act that created Welfare to Work included the specific criteria that much of the work should be outsourced. Incidentally, Lockheed recently announced that it is repurchasing ACS, State and Local Solutions, which will include the handling of the Welfare to Work services. These are the very contracts that were exposed, full of graft, with triple billing by Lockheed when it handled the Welfare to Work. The company has locations in 44 states and employed 4,800 people in the United States just to handle these welfare services, as well as collecting the child support payments for many states and handling a very large contract, the California Medicaid contract, which is Medi-Cal in California, And this is one of the largest contracts for Lockheed Martin. Lockheed Martin employs 132,500 people at 939 facilities in 457 cities and 45 states throughout the United States and has locations in 56 countries overseas. This is a humongous corporation which is living off the federal, the state, the county, and local governments.
And actually, Maya, what's interesting about the record of Lockheed is its role in the international arena, because Lockheed was the principal source of bribes to government officials in countries to which it was seeking to sell U.S. military craft. The bribes were a routine aspect of the functioning. The head of state, the prime minister, the minister of defense in a given country was regularly on the payroll and provided with money, with bribes, outright actual bribes. It's basically a mafia-like operation. It would make the mafia look like a piker's a nest. The Lockheed bribery apparatus became so marked and so shamefacedly explicit and undisguised that the government passed a nominal piece of legislation called the Foreign Corruptions Practices Act, and not a single indictment occurred, not a single official was called to account. All that happens is that the bribery is simply placed within the contract itself, and the funds that are exchanged go into accounts that are not traceable. International arms deals, the Polaris report gives these examples, what it calls Lockheed Martin's history of corporate welfare. The Pentagon's Foreign Military Financing Fund, and by the way, that's a principal instrument of the bribery abroad. The Department of Treasury, U.S. taxpayers pay for Lockheed Martin's overseas arms deals. The Department of Treasury covers 100% of the cost of a $3.8 billion contract. 46 jet contracts were subsidized by the U.S. Department and Treasury between Lockheed Martin and the government of Poland. How did they induce the government of Poland to choose the Lockheed Martin-supplied aircraft? By funding supplied to specific officials in the government. The government of the United States, eager to continue its domination of the international arms market, and attractive deals like these are a huge incentive for governments who cannot normally afford them. It is, in the end, the Polaris report tells us, it is the U.S. taxpayer who ends up subsidizing the entire project. The Poland deal is structured around offset agreements that bring production jobs and technology transfers out of the United States to the purchasing company. They are outsourcing jobs to low-paid workers as part of the payoff arrangement with the government officials in the country concerned, all subsidized by the United States taxpayer. Some of Lockheed Martin's international arms sales funded by U.S. taxpayers through the Foreign Military Financing and Military Aid Act, which is a simple bribery apparatus. Pakistan, the government of Pakistan purchasing Lockheed Martin C-130 Hercules cargo planes funded by the U.S. government under the Pentagon's Foreign Military Finance Program. Israel, the leading recipient. $19 billion for the sale of hundreds of F-16 fighters and other weapon systems, 52 F-16s, and all of it with money that was handed to the Israeli state in the first place, which just comes right back to Lockheed Martin. Human Rights Watch reported that Lockheed Martin's P-3 Orion radar surveillance airplane used to track so-called drug smuggling was part of the military aid package to the Colombian military used by the death squads throughout Colombia. Between 1993 and 2002, Colombia received billions in military aid from the United States to the benefit of who? Why, Lockheed Martin.
Ralph, and with respect to Colombia, we have another example as DynCorp with Lockheed Martin and the privatized army. The U.S. government pays for Lockheed to have 200 subcontractor personnel working directly for the Colombian National Police and the Colombian aircraft. this, there is a list of the international customers for Lockheed in the Polaris report. Algeria, Argentina, Australia, Austria, Bahrain, Brazil, Belgium, Canada, Chile, China, Colombia, Croatia, Czech Republic, Denmark, Egypt, Ecuador, France, Germany, Greece, India, Indonesia, Iran, Israel, Italy, Japan, Jordan, Korea, Lithuania, Malaysia, Mexico, Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Oman, Pakistan, Panama, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Singapore, Slovak Republic, Spain, United Arab Emirates, United Kingdom, Taiwan, Thailand, Turkey, and Venezuela. It is an incredible list.
Well, it is the planet Earth. Every functioning government in every part of the planet is simply a subsidiary of American imperialism. The governments in place occupy the same relationship to their population as does our own. Where 1% in the United States owns and controls more than 95% of the rest of the population combined, these ruling class apparatchiks in each of these respective countries have the same relationship to their own population. What are we looking at here? Let's just take a very brief moment to see what the Polaris report calls the environmental track record. Depleted uranium, landmines, cluster bombs, environmental destruction through gaseous diffusions in Kentucky and California. It's got a domestic dimension as well. The cluster bombs and the depleted uranium are devastating civilian populations, poisoning their atmosphere, their soil, and their water supply, destroying the civilian population for generations, affecting the cannon fodder U.S. troops who serve in those countries as well. This is the apparatus of the murder state. This is the profile of the ruling class. This is the architecture of capitalist control. It is useless to talk about one party versus another party that is controlled by these forces. We are describing here a murder apparatus that works its way within our country and without.
Lockheed and the murder state. Before we close, I'd like to remind you that this week and next are the closing moments of the trial of Lynn Stewart. Please attend to hear the summation. The summation by Michael Tigger, her attorney, will probably be January 3rd and 4th. All out, show your solidarity with Lynn Stewart. Look at her website, www.lynnstewart.org. This has been Taking Aim with
Rob Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Lockheed and the Murder State will be on our website, www.takingaim.info. We'll be with you next week.